Hello and welcome to Cloud Cover, episode 88. I'm Nick Harris. And
Michael Washam.
So Michael is a senior technical evangelist on our team, and he's focused on IaaS, right?
In addition to PowerShell, which is what everyone always has seen me on Cloud Cover for. But today we're not going to cover a whole lot of PowerShell, just a little bit.
Awesome. So thank you for coming on the show. Nate's still away on his
vacation
or cruise around the Bahamas, I think.
Pretends to be having fun while we're here doing the real work. Yeah. But that's okay.
But I appreciate that today you put a lot of effort in and ironed your shirt.
I did. It's a little stained, but everything else is pretty much on track.
I didn't get time to iron mine either. But anyhow, so let's jump to the news.
Okay.
So there's been a little bit of news this week. So the first one is actually a really interesting post by Scott Goo, and that's how Windows Azure Media Services was used in the London Olympics this year.
Good to know.
Yeah, so for those that haven't watched our media services show, essentially it's providing capability to use Windows Azure to ingest, encode, format, and convert video streams, store that video, add content protection, add advertising sort of inline, and basically provide you smooth streaming, video on demand, or live video.
And this was a really good proof of concept because it was done on an extremely large scale, very massive demand.
That's right.
So it's huge, a great proof of concept, you know. I mean, not just proof of concept, it showed that it's extremely scalable and used in a real world scenario.
Yeah, I don't think it would be easy to get a better showcase sort of demonstration of the power of Windows Azure Media Services.
Right.
So the cool thing about it is, so as far as that encoding is concerned, you can then go and play that content out to, as it says here, HTML, Silverlight, Flash, Windows 8 devices, iPads, iPhones, Android, Xbox, Windows Phone, like basically every
any
device
platform
you could ever want. So that's cool. But there's a summary here saying that they helped deliver over 2,300 hours of live video.
Wow.
And if we come down a bit further, one of the things that I think is quite sort of good about this solution, if you look at Windows Azure Media Services versus rolling your own, the broadcasters that Media Services was used for at the Olympics, if they were to build their own, it goes here and says that basically they need to buy and lease, they need networking equipment, compute, storage, and hardware, they need to deploy it, they need to glue them together, they need to manage the deployment and run into multiple data centers, you know, get the fault tolerance in there, pay for power, air conditioning, and operations stuff.
It'd be interesting if there was an actual dollar amount to tie that to, but you know, just knowing the details of what would be necessary to replicate this service and tell it would be in the millions.
Yep. And then basically with media services, you can do all this in a few lines of code.
Right.
Which is one of the fundamental things that we're trying to do with Azure is make things extremely easy to do. And this is a great demonstration of that. And cheap. So that's one. Smarks has surfaced again. So Steve, I got a chance to catch up with him recently, but he's got a great post here about calling the Windows Azure Service Management API
from
utilizing Python.
Very nice.
So he's got some demo code there. Now, this demo code, as he states, only works on OS X, and it doesn't currently work on Windows. So he thinks that Python on Windows has an old version of OpenSSL. So for those Python fans out there, here's some sample code to get you started.
Very nice. Shows how to parse the published settings for us as well.
Yep. So the next one, very important asset for those people who want to learn about Windows Azure. So Corey, last week, and towards the end of the week, released an update to the Windows Azure Training Kit.
Right.
So the Windows Azure Training Kit is a resource that our team produces, and it basically has presentations, hands-on labs.
We'll soon have demos.
We'll soon have demos that we're working on that are all distributed in one downloadable package,
right,
or you can get them piece by piece with the content installer.
Great for getting ramped up on whatever piece of Windows Azure you don't have a deep set of knowledge on.
Yep. So it basically covers all the fundamental services that Azure provides. And in this particular release, we released some new presentations for running dev camps, but also made some updates to some existing SQL Azure
Visual Studio 2012, I think, was in this release as well.
Yep.
A few updated labs.
Yep. So there's a few updated labs that utilize VS 2012.
Right.
One of them being the Win8 plus Windows Azure deck there.
Which you had something to do with, right?
Might have had a little bit to do with that one. All right. So This is a slightly older post by another one of our team members. His name's Chris Reisner, and at some point we'll have him on the show because he's our iOS and Android expert.
And he's new to the area, too. So,
that's right.
You know, whenever he's not trying to find a place to live or find a grocery store or not getting lost at work, yeah. You should have him on the show to explain what he does for a living now. So.
That's right. That's probably a good idea. So Chris's focus, as I was saying there, is iOS and Android scenarios utilizing Windows Azure as your backend. So this post, as I said, is a little bit older, but he goes on to show how from iOS you can use Windows Azure and Signal R to be able to initiate server-to-client communication scenarios.
Very useful.
Which is, yeah, definitely enables some very cool application scenarios.
And it looks like he's showing that in Objective-C JavaScript as
well. The server side he does in C#, so how do you create the Signal R hub? Yep. And he gives a JavaScript client example, but then he goes down and shows how to do that with iOS and Objective-C.
Very nice.
So as we come down, it's there, and he's got some source there for it as well.
And what's his blog? It's chrisreisner.com.
Chrisreisner.com. Okay. So the next piece of news that I'd like to point out to people is this: the Windows Azure Community News Roundup. It's one of the useful posts that comes out every week, or almost every week, on windowsazure.com. And they come and they point to useful community articles. But one of the things that I really wanted to point out here was the upcoming events. So Windows Azure, we do run a lot of community events out there. One of the big streams is called the Windows Azure Developer Camps. And we typically have them running every week in regions all around
all
the world.
All over the world, right.
Yeah. So you can see the North America ones there, the Europe ones there, and the rest of the world for this week. If you need a bit of, like, more advanced notice as to when one's coming to your area, you can just navigate off to the DevCamp website. So you can go in here, go to Windows Azure.
And find one locally in your area.
Yep. Come down, you can see the schedule there, and as you can see, there's like pages and pages of events coming. So, next one, Michael.
Yay.
Would you like to tell us about this and perhaps then jump into
some demos?
Yeah.
So in this blog post, what I was wanting to do is basically show how you could use Windows Azure Virtual Machines to host a web farm. So it's pretty straightforward to, you know, everyone has likely already seen creating virtual machines. But one of the things I haven't seen yet is how to actually configure one for a web farm for doing content synchronization and everything. So in this example post, basically had created two virtual machines. I created them based off of an image that already has all the web platform and everything already built baked into it. And I show how you can use WebDeploy to basically synchronize web content across any number of servers in your deployment. So I kind of do a little bit creative stuff. I use a Windows Azure PowerShell command lets to figure out all the different virtual machines in your service. So if you have four at one time, it'll synchronize all four. But if you only have two, it'll synchronize both of them. And you don't have to go update your script when you add or remove servers.
So the use case there is if you've got a VM.
Right.
And you want to have that content, say your website, you've got an update and you deploy that and you want that to fan out across the rest of the web farm.
You basically are doing scale out, except instead of hosting it on a Windows Azure website, you might be hosting it on a virtual machine, for instance. I'm going to work on one doing Linux pretty soon as well, but this one's all focused on IIS and ASP.NET.
Cool. Looks like a comprehensive post.
Yeah, it's pretty detailed. So I'm going to show an example of how we can do that today. It's not going to be quite as detailed. I'm not going to do PowerShell to dynamically discover VMs, but I will show you how to configure it and actually do the content synchronization.
Awesome.
So a couple other things we wanted to show today. This is going to be our Windows Azure Infrastructure Service Tips and Tricks episode, and I'm going to show three tips or tricks, whichever one you want to call them. The first one is you guys brought up is that we wanted to show how to do virtual networking.
So
if you're not familiar with Windows Azure Virtual Networks, what it basically is a technology that allows you to deploy a site-to-site virtual private network between your servers in the cloud and your on-premises data center. What I'm going to show in this one is how you can actually deploy a site-to-site network from Windows Azure to my on-premises data center back in my office in Building 40. The device I'm going to configure is a Cisco ASA5505. I was literally going to bring it over here and show, hey, look what I have, but I forgot to bring it. It's still sitting on my desk.
You even unboxed it this
morning. I unboxed
it
and got it all ready and completely walked out of the room without it.
But so you've got one of them that is set up on your desk.
Yes.
And you're going to configure a VPN from Azure down to that.
Correct. So I have two devices. I actually have three. One of them's I don't remember what the third one is, but one of them is actually plugged into the network in my office, and it's hooked up to a domain controller back in my office too, running under a server under my desk.
Awesome.
So let's jump into the demo and start walking through it.
Let's cut across.
Okay, so the first thing we want to do is to define a virtual network. What I'm going to do is, I already have one defined for another demonstration, so I'm going to define a brand new one. So the first thing is, in the Windows Azure portal, I'll create a new network. I'll call this Hybrid VNet 2. And your virtual network is tied to an affinity group, so you have to have one already defined. So I'm going to put this one in West US.
All right.
And the next thing I need to do is define the actual address space, all the IP addresses that I'm going to allocate to machines running up in the cloud.
All right.
So for this one, I'm going to put it on class B /16, which means that the two bits on my left, 10.5, are the network mask, and 0.0 is a host.
All right.
What I can do next is carve this up into different subnets. So I'll create a subnet called app subnet. And I'll just pick 1.0/24. And you can make as many subnets as you want. And right now, there's not a whole lot of advantage to creating multiple subnets because they're basically on the same network. They can communicate with each other. But going forward, one of the things that's on the roadmap for virtual networking is to enable ACLs, access control, between the different subnets. So you can open up different ports and all that. So once we've defined the address space of what our cloud network is going to look like, I can create a DNS server, which I already have one. This is basically a named IP address mapping that points back to my domain controller on-prem.
All right.
If you want to see what it looks like, I can just
have a look. Yeah,
on-prem DNS 2, and I just give it the same IP address.
All right. Pretty straightforward.
Pretty straightforward. Probably don't want to have both of them, but that's essentially all you'd have to do. The so next thing you need to do...
Down in the bottom here, it's starting to give a visualization of what you're building as well.
Correct.
Yeah. Okay.
The next thing I need to do is configure the gateway subnet. So the gateway subnet is basically the subnet that your device is going to... or that the Windows Azure gateway is going to allocate its IP address off of. So I will give it .5.2.0/24. And at this point, I can create a new on-prem network, which is asking for my virtual private network IP address and the address space. So this would be on-prem network 2. I'd give it my VIP IP, the actual public IP address for my Cisco device, and which I don't actually have it on me right now.
Okay.
So I'll flip back and connect to the one I already created. But essentially all you're going to do is type in the IP address of your Cisco device, and you're going to give it the IP addresses of all the machines on your local network that you want to build to translate traffic to. At this point, I click OK, and it will create this new network for me. So now, as soon as it's created, it's not ready, obviously. What I need to do next is I'm going to have to provision a gateway, which whenever I create a gateway for this network, it's actually going to, when I go into it, it shows that it's not connected.
Right.
So if I go in here and I click the Create Gateway button, it's actually going to provision two worker roles, just like Windows Azure Web or worker roles.
Right.
It's the exact same technology, except these worker roles are running the VPN gateway software running inside of Windows. Okay, so here's a time where we're going to take 8 minutes to wait for the damn gateway to provision.
Let's all go to the lobby to get ourselves a treat.
All right, so now that we've actually created the gateway, what you didn't see during the clip was about an 8 to 9 minute intermission where it actually spun up the worker roles and provisioned a gateway. So now that the gateway is created, you can see it's still actually not connected because our Cisco device is not just going to let anyone create a VPN tunnel. We have to authenticate with the with that device.
Right.
So what I'm going to do is I'm going to take the configuration from the gateway, which first thing I need is the gateway IP address, and I'm actually going to go configure the Cisco device. So this is the admin tool for the Cisco device under my desk. A lot of the really good networking people would use this Alter SSH, but I wouldn't classify myself as a good networking person.
So you've remote desktoped to the machine under your desk, and you're configuring the Cisco device.
Right.
There.
So what I'm going to do is I'm going to run a wizard, being a Microsoft guy, that's all I know how to do. I'm going to hit the IPsec VPN tunnel,
right.
And I'm going to configure a site-to-site network. I need to give it the IP address of my Azure Gateway.
Right.
And the next thing I need is the pre-shared key. This is a key that the Cisco device uses that we share keys between the gateway and the device so it knows how to authenticate with each other.
All right.
So I'm going to put in the key. The default encryption settings for Ike are fine. One thing I do have to disable is enable perfect forwarding secrecy. For some reason, Windows Azure Virtual Networks does not support that. Next thing I need to do is, just like I define the network address space in the cloud, I need to define the exact same scenario on my device.
All right.
So I'm going to define the local network, which is 192.168.1.0/24. And it's already a little object, but just so we can make it clear, I won't give the object name. Oops, did it backwards. Okay, and I need to give it the address space of what we defined in the cloud so it knows what the remote network is. So this is 10.5.0.0/16. So these are our two networks, our on-prem and our public cloud network. If you notice, this checkbox at the bottom is exempt ASA host side host network from address translation. What that's saying is do not NAT address requests between the on-prem network and the cloud network. We don't want to have NAT in this. So make sure that box is checked, or if you're configuring it from SSH, make sure that you get rid of that you do not do network address translation between the networks. And that's pretty much it. So what's going to happen behind the scenes is the Windows Azure Gateway is going to switch to its state to connecting, and you can see that here. And it's actually going to reach out to that VPN device, use an IP address I gave it during configuration, and try to establish a connection. It usually takes anywhere from 2 to 5 minutes to make that happen.
Okay.
So once that happens, we'll go ahead and show how we can provision a new virtual machine into this network. We actually can do that now. I'll show you two tricks. I'll show you how you can provision a VM just into the network.
Right.
And then I'll show you another trick how you can actually provision it into Active Directory.
Okay.
So I'll go ahead and create a new virtual machine.
So one of the news things that I read here was that, if you just go back for a second, Windows Server 2012 is now available.
Oh, good point, good point. We should have brought that up. So yes, Windows Server 2012, August 2012, that is the RTM version of Windows Server. That is the final release bit, and it's now available as a VM.
And it's so good it doesn't need a logo.
It's still so good it doesn't need a logo, that's right. So we'll use a Windows Server 2012 one to add it to the VNet.
All right.
So give my password, and all that's required to add this VM to the network is to pick a storage account in the same data center as VNet. If you pick one in East, it won't be available to you. Then you pick the virtual network that you just configured in the dropdown. And whenever this machine boots up, it will actually be in the right subnet, whichever one you pick here, and in that virtual network. So whenever that machine boots up, I'll actually have access to communicate back to the VM under my desk.
Nice.
As you can see, the VPN connection is solid now, so it did establish a connection. So let me do the same thing, except I'm going to show you how you can actually boot up a VM, a Server 2012 VM, using PowerShell. We can't do a session with me on Cloud Cover without PowerShell. That does Active Directory.
Okay,
so the script that I have basically defines the password for the virtual machine, the credentials for the domain, the actual image that we're going to use to create the virtual machine with, and that finally I'm actually telling it to use the add Azure provisioning config to pass in all the domain credentials and stuff that I need to have this VM automatically boot up and connect to the domain controller back on premises and be a domain joined VM. So I'll go ahead and just hit F5, and it should go off and create cloud service and create the virtual machine to domain join it.
All right.
Okay, and while that's chugging away.
That's going to be one of the first times your PowerShell scripts worked straight away.
Yeah, it's amazing. So that'll take a while to provision, and maybe we'll log in here in a little while and see if it's booted up and everything. So let's talk about some of the other tips and tricks that we were talking about.
Right.
Like in the blog post, we talked about doing web form synchronization.
Right.
So we'll get out of Windows Azure Virtual Networking for now. And let me show you another demo that I have. I have IsFarm 1 and ISVM Farm 2. These are just two web servers that I've already provisioned. If you look at the configuration for them, they have load balancing already enabled.
Yep.
So, you know, I can hit this guy from the website and it'll work. What I want to do is enable this so I can publish from Visual Studio, because I'm a dev guy. I write my code. I want to publish it and see it work. And the other thing is, since it's two VMs, I want that content to actually be synchronized.
Yep. So you don't want one request hitting old content and
exactly.
the next request hitting the new content.
Right. So what I'm going to do is we released WebDeploy 3.0 just a few weeks ago. And I'm going to show you how you can configure WebDeploy to do content synchronization in IS.
Awesome.
So the first thing you should know about WebDeploy is it default installs to port 80. So whenever I do deploy on Visual Studio, it hits port 80 and it tries to copy the files.
Yep.
In a load-balanced environment, though, which server is it going to hit? Right.
Right.
And if it's multiple requests, it could that deployment could actually go to both VMs, and deployment is just going to fail miserably. So what you need to do, first thing to do in a farm environment, is you have to deploy WebDeploy on a different port.
Right.
And there's a command you can use that'll actually put this on a different port. And I'm going to pick one of the VMs to be the master server, and that's where I'm going to configure the publishing to occur. So I'm going to install WebDeploy on port 8080 instead of 80. And I'm going to do this on both VMs, so that way they can do synchronization between the two.
Yep. So now you can go direct from, say, your dev machine to VM1 or VM2 without going via the load balancer.
Right, via the load balancer.
Yep.
So the WebDeploy will actually listen on 8080 on both servers, but only one of them will be the public publishing source. So I'm going to go ahead and install 8080 or WebDeploy on 8080 on the other server as well. So this is ISVM1, and this is ISVM2. Now if I go to the command line and I do netstat -an more, you can see now that we have something listening on port 8080.
Yep.
So we know the web deploy is working. Next thing I need to do is open up firewall rule for 8080. So I'll just create a new inbound port rule. And I'll call this rule something creative like web deploy. And I need to do the exact same rule on this one because it's going to be the target publishing server. So give it 8080 and web deploys well. And finally, for ISVM Farm 2, I'm going to make it the target server. I need to open up a public endpoint for 8080 just alone on this one.
Yep.
So I'll say web deploy, the exact same scenario, 8080 for the public port and 8080 for the private port.
Right. So it is going through, is it going to go through the load balancer, or did you check that or not? What's the...
It's not going to, so there's only one endpoint. So this particular endpoint, when I communicate to the cloud service on 8080, it'll
it's going
to
go
to one server.
Right.
And what I'm going to do is on that server, I'm going to run a job that will synchronize whatever content it gets published to any other servers that I have in my farm.
Gotcha.
So I'm not going to show you the automated task of how you can do scheduled tasks to keep them all in sync. That's on my blog if you want more information.
Right.
But what I'm going to do is show you how you can use WebDeploy from the command line to synchronize all the different servers.
Okay.
So we'll show that here in just a second. Let me show you what the actual command line tool looks like. So sync.bat is just a batch file I've put together that does MS deploy.
There we go.
And I'm passed the sync verb. And I can give it the content path. So this is going to be, I'm going to synchronize wwwroot from ISVM2 farm to wwwroot of ISVM1 farm.
Right.
MS deploy supports tons of other options. You can have it support synchronized GAC components and all kinds of settings, like your app pulls and everything. But in this one, I'm just doing pure content.
It's a handy tip.
Yep. So what you would normally do in a farm environment is what I outline in my blog post is how you can create a scheduled task to run a batch job like this every few minutes and keep everything in sync. But we're not going to do a scheduled task in this one. So is our web deploy job almost done? It's thinking about it. So while it's thinking, let me go ahead and get a...
There it is.
There it is. Okay. So now we can go ahead and actually deploy some code to this server. Oops, not that one. So I'm going to get the URL for our VMs, and I'm going to pull up Visual Studio. In Visual Studio, I've just modified the MVC4 example, and all I've done is put the computer name on it. So you can, whenever it loads, you can see which computer name it's actually running from. So I'm going to go through Publish. I'll create a new publishing profile. And for the service URL, I'm going to put our VM URL, except on 8080. I'm going to publish this to the default website.
Yeah.
And that's going to be our destination URL. And now I need to give it the username and password. So how you would do this is basically have a publishing account that you keep synchronized across all the different servers. You could use a domain account too, or if you don't want to set up a domain, just use synchronized local accounts. And you can validate the connection here to make sure it all works. And I'll go ahead and hit publish. And this should copy our app up to VM.
Nice.
And now when it launches, though, it may or may not work, right? It's on IS7. And the reason is because we haven't synchronized content yet. We have two servers in the farm.
It may have hit the second server.
Right, it may hit the second server. So what I'm going to do now is show you how the batch file runs. So I'm just going to go ahead and run sync. And it's getting setting up the connections. It's adding the content. Right, and so doing the synchronization.
Pull the content from your web root, pushes it across to server 2.
That's right. So now, when I go back and I hit F5, we should have the content deployed on both servers. We just got to wait for it to compile and start up and everything. There we go.
Cool.
So and you can see we're on VM1. Now, if I hit F5 a couple of times, I should see VM2. There we go.
There you go.
So now we've just enabled a farm. And if you follow my blog post, it shows you how to do this in a very automated fashion.
Yeah. So for the automated fashion, are you just using like a scheduled task in Windows?
I'm using a scheduled task.
Okay.
Yep. Along with actually the PowerShell commandlets.
Okay.
And the reason I'm using the PowerShell commandlets is, you know, right now
we
have
them.
Two. Yeah, that in addition. Okay. But right now we have two VMs. What happens if we wanted to scale it up to 8? We create 6 more VMs. We don't want to have to go back and change our synchronization job to add the other 6 servers. The PowerShell commandlets can discover at runtime how many VMs are in your service, and you can do it dynamically.
Yeah, certainly useful for scripting tasks that need to be repeated.
Automated builds. Yeah. So the final tip I'm going to show is a little off-kilter for what we normally show. It's going to be a Linux VM demo.
But before we jump to that, did our VM get deployed in our VNet? Are we able to see, like, on-prem to...
I have two of them booting, so I don't know.
Oh, that's those two there.
Yeah.
Right, gotcha. So let's do the Linux and then
we'll do the other one.
Yeah,
I think we might have to come back for the other one. Sometimes doing a domain join over the VNet takes a little while.
Okay.
So one thing you'll notice whenever you do a Linux VM, this is running Ubuntu, is the connect button is disabled.
Right.
And the reason it's disabled is because we do RDP. And by default, Linux doesn't have RDP. SSH into it and everything. One neat trick I learned, I'm not a Linux expert by any stretch of imagination, and this tip is for other Windows people that aren't Linux admins, because a Linux user would already know this.
Right.
One of the things I wanted to do is enable it so I can, you know, jump in and actually use this thing with a desktop.
Okay.
So I created a Linux VM, and you can use SSH into the VM, and you can enable RDP over for your Linux VM.
Via the command line.
Via the command line.
Cool.
Well, maybe. There it goes. In our Linux console, nothing new to see here. But what I'm going to do is enable RDP for X Windows. Now, one of the things I've already done is I've already installed the Ubuntu desktop. It's basically the same command line here, but it takes a lot longer to actually install. So it's going to enable an RDP server.
All right. What about the ports for that?
So that's the next thing I need to do. As soon as that's done, is I need to flip over to my server and add a new endpoint. So I'm going to add an RDP endpoint. And this is what's going to light up the connect button in the portal.
All right.
So I open it up for port 3389. And as soon as it configures the load balancer to forward that traffic, we'll actually be able to launch a remote desktop right into a Linux VM. So let's flip back over to our SSH client. And you can see, starting remote desktop server, it's all good. And just like Windows, I can run netstat. If I can type. and I can see that there is now a service listening on port 3389, just like remote desktop server. So this is almost there. Not quite yet. As soon as that's allocated, the connect button at the bottom will light up. Now, one thing I do want to add, the Linux guy on our team did say, you don't want to do a remote desktop over Linux. You want to do X over SSH. It's much faster. So if you're a Linux person, yeah, this is just Windows people playing because we know RDP and we don't understand remoting X that well. But that's a different story. And yes, I have tried this and it is a little laggy at first. But once the VM's actually up and running, it's not too bad. Major pain. There it is. Okay, so the RDP endpoint has completed, so now I should be able to go back to my virtual machine dashboard, and you notice we have a connect button there. So I'm click open, connect. Now you're going to get something you're not used to seeing, this weird X Windows login. So I'll go ahead and type in my credentials. And keep in mind, whenever it first connects, it is really laggy to redraw everything, but once it's up and running, it's actually not too bad. So here's my dashboard home, my apps, I can start Firefox, I can, lo and behold, launch another terminal. Everything you ever wanted to do. So,
nice.
Nice little tip for, you know, getting started with Linux and Windows Azure if you're not a guru yet, knowing how to do X over SSH.
Okay. Cool.
All right. That's pretty much all my tips for the week.
Is it?
Yeah, okay. It is. We can come up with some more later, but
okay.
I think three, you know, VNet, Linux, and web farms, that's pretty good.
Yeah, I particularly liked your web farm demo for syncing the content.
That was really cool. Yeah. Just having the tools where you don't have to manually go write a bunch of code to keep track, make sure file locking is working and all that stuff. It just works out really well.
So what's next? What are we up to? Tip of the week?
Think so.
All right.
Did you come up with a tip of the week?
Other
than to work harder on getting a tip of the week.
Yeah. I've got two great tip of the weeks this week, if that's how you say it, or tips of the week.
Tips of the week.
Yeah. And we're back. Cool.
Is that right?
Yeah, that's all. That's good. I like your welcome back. Thumbs up. So, we've actually got two tips of the week this week. I'll keep them brief. I brought in two essentially because I didn't have time to prepare some code, but they are actually some extremely useful tips. So the first one is by Brady Gaster. So he's one of our fellow team members, and he's got this method that you can use to clean up your log files on your Windows Azure websites. So one thing to note about Windows Azure websites is the logs that you're generating there, you get 1 gig across all 10 websites to utilize for logs. So you may want to purge that data, you know, as it grows and gets larger and larger.
Copy them off somewhere else for analysis, that kind of stuff.
Yep. So in this particular example, what he's got here is he's found this clean logs HTTP handler. And now this piece of code has been authored by someone, and it's available via NuGet. So basically what you do is you install this NuGet package into your website, you deploy it, and then that then provides this HTTP handler that you can hit via, you know, a URL.
Scheduled task or something.
Yep, scheduled task or cron job or whatnot
right.
to go and purge these logs. So what he goes on to say is to show people how they can actually set up that scheduled task using a cron job, similar to what Nathan used for something else in one of his other posts.
I remember his post.
Yeah.
Or you can use a scheduled task in a Windows VM or a cron job in a Linux VM. Now that you know how to do RDP, you've saved yourself so much time.
Sounds complicated and expensive for one cron job to run a whole VM.
What if you need two?
So that's the first one, cleaning your website logs.
Right.
Okay. So the next one is interesting. So this is Ming-Fei Yan. So she's a program manager on Windows Azure Media Services. So given we talked about media services in the Olympics, I thought it'd be useful to point out some really useful assets that Ming has created here to explain essentially how you get started with media services.
Notice she had lots of good code samples in here too, didn't she?
Yeah, so if we come down, basically what you want to do is read the blog in reverse order, because it starts out, well, how do I get access to media services? So she's got a nice step-by-step there that shows you how to request access in the portal. And then she goes on and starts showing you how to go and code against this. So if I jump into this one, let's see how we can convert MP4 to smooth streaming format using media services. And as you can see here, she's done a great job of listing out the dependencies, but then also providing a hands-on step-by-step tutorial with code. I like the syntax highlighting here. And as you go along, it just goes down and progressively adds more and more details
so you
can
get a full
complete
working
the task.
Example.
Yep. So certainly if you're interested in media services, I'd highly recommend this blog
looks like
to come
resource.
On. Yeah. Yep. And that's basically it for Tip of the Week.
Sounds good.
Yep. So with that, thanks for coming on, Michael.
Hey, thank you for having me on.
Always like to have you on. You've always got great IaaS stuff to take us through.
Try to.
Yeah. And thank you for watching.
Hey, thank you.